it's the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour on 810 WGY.
You're listening to the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour. I'm Greg Rinky, and each Sunday at 9 p.m., I'm here to give my insight on the legal and political issues happening locally and across the country that affect you. In addition to listening on your radio, we are broadcasting around the world on WGY.com. Visit our show site at TullyRinkyShow.com for podcasts of previous shows. We're lucky tonight to be joined by attorney Paul Harding of Martin Harding & Mazzotti. Paul's here tonight to share his knowledge on personal injury law. Tonight, we'll be looking at some interesting topics in some of the more well-known personal injury and wrongful death cases, including the famous and infamous McDonald's hot coffee incidents, the Hold Your Wee to Win a Wee story, the in and outs of dealing with your insurance company after an incident or accident, and the elements that make a strong personal injury case and how damages are calculated. Also with us tonight are Val and Chris. And if you have any questions for Paul throughout the show, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or press star WGY on your cell phone. Thanks for joining us tonight, Paul.
Well, thanks for being here. I've listened to the show, and I would say that now that I'm here, I'm looking around, and Val and Chris, they are ready to go. We did talk a little bit before the show, and they have some great questions. So thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. There's actually an interesting story of how our firms got to know each other. And Paul, why don't you elaborate a little bit on how Tully Rinky and Martin Harding actually got together?
Well, it happened like this. I was in my car, and I was driving, and I was listening to a show. And the show had a lawyer on, and I wasn't familiar with the lawyer's name. It was Matt Tully. It was when the Tully Rinky firm had made their way into Albany before they had become a household name that they are today. And they were being interviewed, and they asked them, they said, well, you do this kind of law and that kind of law. And one of the folks said, well, do you do personal injury? And Matt said, no, we leave that to the heavy hitters. And I just thought that was kind of neat, and I sent Matt a note, just kind of thanking him for the mentioning us. And we ended up, as you know, we got together and we had lunch. And since then, we've had just a great relationship, our firm exclusively doing personal injury and doing nothing else, and of course, your firm doing virtually everything else. So it's been a great relationship.
Well, let's talk about personal injury here, Paul. I got a story. I got a friend that was at a Price Chopper a couple weeks ago, and he was walking through the fruits aisle, and he slipped on a grape.
Mm-hmm.
He hurt himself. You know, he hurt his back a little, fell down, hit his back.
Yeah.
What can he do now?
Well, I got to tell you, first of all, Price Chopper. In particular, when you look at the stores and where people fail. I mean, they are a very organized group. They have a group that tends to be very well-kept. They have wonderful accident reports, and they tend to not put themselves in a position of liability. In this situation, it is highly unlikely that this grape is going to produce much of a claim. Here's a rule in New York, and it's a pretty good rule and kind of a tough one for us to work with at times, but it certainly works to the advantage sometimes of the folks who own businesses and own stores. The rule is this. When you get hurt, you look at what caused. In this case, it's a grape. You'd have a duty to prove that the store either created the dangerous defect, in this case, that they put the grape there, highly unlikely, or they knew about it and they failed to take reasonable steps to make it safe. Well, guess what? In order for there to be a claim, we would need to show that either they are putting grapes throughout the store in order to check with people's dexterity and whether or not they can manage to get around the store and miss grapes, highly unlikely. Or number two, you've got a situation where they saw it on the floor and they failed to clean it up. You know, and that might be true. Good luck proving it.
I mean, how long does that grape have to sit there for them to – could it sit there for maybe – it was there on video camera for 5 hours,
yeah,
and nobody picked it up?
Oh, believe me, there's no video camera of that. But I will say this. There's a famous case. It's the apple. I take it back. It's the banana peel case. Because the banana peel, if you look at it and you say, well, I fell on a banana peel. Highly unlikely you'd have a claim under the same set of facts that I just outlined. But if the banana peel is brown or even black, well, guess what? It oxidized. It's been there a while. And as a store owner, you just can't just not look down purposely and say, you know, I've never seen anything on the ground. We have the best stores. We have the best floors in the world because we never look down at our floors to see what's there. So there was a case that came down, and it was a New York State case, and the banana peel had oxidized. It had been there for a very long period of time. And in that case, we were able to proceed to show that they had notice of the defect.
Well, really, doesn't it just come down to reasonableness? I mean, reasonably, I mean, if you're walking down an aisle and there's a grape, I mean, doesn't it really just come down to reasonableness? And I think this is something that gets a lot of people very frustrated when it comes to these type of cases is people aren't being reasonable.
You know, you're right. And, you know, you asked the question. I gave the best answer I could. But I would tell you that there are, you know, no one's out there as an attorney bringing these cases. If they do bring them, it's going to make the news. It's going to be something. But, yeah, you have a duty to kind of look out what's in front of you, to make reasonable decisions. And if you're falling on grapes, you know, you're pretty much are not going to have a claim. And you're going to be kind of held to the standard of, look, you have a duty to see what's in front of you.
You don't want me to call you then?
Well, you know, we always like phone calls, and then we like to explain the law to them. So, yeah, more calls than less, yes.
On that same note, for our listeners out there, if you guys want to give us a call, I have a question for Paul or any of us. Call 1-800-TALK-WGY.
Well, what is, Paul, the type of case where if you suffer an injury, what is the type of case that people should be calling you for?
You know, I think, again, to Chris's point, you know, people are going to have questions. They're not going to know much about this. Call, get educated. And we're going to be pretty blunt as to whether or not we think you have a claim or not. But in terms of where people, again, they get in motor vehicle accidents. They get in situations where they are unable to work, when they've been victimized by a drunk driver, when they have been in a position that has made them disabled. They call. Is it the result of someone's negligence? Did someone fail to do what was reasonable presented with the facts? Again, a rough definition of negligence. Most of our cases involve motor vehicle or slip and fall type cases or involving construction accidents.
Well, you say reasonable, and you guys are talking about reasonable a lot. Reasonable to like a normal person, or what do you mean?
A reasonably prudent person. It's the legal standard.
It is a legal standard, but ultimately when you look at these verdicts, and again, the ones that make the newspaper, and I guess there are a couple on today's list which have not only made the newspaper, but made national media and made people very angry, and quite frankly, I don't even agree with some of them, but I would say that ultimately a jury is the one who's going to make this assessment. If the case proceeds past the judge, and the judge says, you know, there's enough here to have a jury look at this, then it's going to be a jury's determination as to what's reasonable, but excellent question.
So what I find interesting, back to the how you love callers, you do free consults, is that correct?
We do free consults. We're in a lot of different markets, and of course WGY is a very powerful station and probably covers most of these markets, but we're in the Plattsburgh-Burlington market. We're also in a situation where we are in Utica, and I would say this, we get tons of calls every day. Maybe we get up to 100 calls a day. Of that, we probably give about 80% of the people free advice, and the other ones, you know, have potential claims that we look into. We operate on a contingency. What it means is if we take your case, we don't get paid a nickel unless we recover money for you.
Speaking of calls, we have Andrea from Amsterdam who has a question about disability and work injuries. Andrea, you're on the air.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My husband is 57 years old. He's a truck driver. He's not in terribly good health. He had a knee replacement about 5 years ago. The other one is bad. He's walking with a cane, but he's out there working because we're a two-income family, and, you know, he's got a family to support. But I guess my question is, as his health deteriorates, how does someone actually go about getting disability coverage, I guess?
Okay, and Andrea, I think what you're maybe referring to, and please stop me immediately if I'm wrong, deals with Social Security disability. Is that sort of maybe what you're...
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
I don't know a lot about it.
Okay, because, you know, as it pertains to these injuries, one's going to assume that these injuries that he had and this has been a period of time as a result of work, but not a particular accident per se. So is that true?
Well, before he had his knee replaced, it was actually a work-related injury.
Okay, so he had a workers' compensation claim?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you get to a situation where he is unable to work, there's the federal system, the Social Security disability, he would then apply to that because it does you put certain points in, and it's very complex, but at the end of the day, he's been working, he will qualify, and if he is unable to work, then Social Security disability would be an avenue to try. And, you know, again, hopefully his health does not continue to deteriorate. But if it gets to the point where he just can't perform his everyday functions, you know, that you would contact an attorney that does this type of work. Obviously, we do also. And try to find out if he does qualify for Social Security disability.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to also hear from you tonight. If you have a question, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or *WGY on your cell phones. If you have questions but you can't join us tonight, don't forget that we can be reached all week at the Tully Rinke office at 518-218-7100. When we're back, we'll continue our discussion with Paul.
As a busy working professional, looking good's important to you. No one understands this better than Best Cleaners, the Capital Region's premier garment care provider and dry cleaner. Got a wrinkle in your schedule? Best Cleaners offers pickup and delivery of your dry cleaning right from your home or office, so you don't have to fit one more errand into your busy week. Call 458-BEST, and we'll take care of the rest. With three locations in Del Mar, Loudonville, and on the Latham Circle, Best Cleaners. Always look your best. Call 458-BEST. 458-BEST.
If a commercial lease is in your future, listen closely. Conley Associates will provide you with an honest, unbiased comparison of available office space. Unlike the competition, Conley Associates works directly with you, the tenant, finding your business the ideal location at the best terms. Best of all, leave the landlords to us, because we represent tenants only. Secure your new office space with a tenants-only approach from Conley Associates. Landlords need not apply. Conley Associates, 463-5500.
You know this isn't the right job for you, but the problem is you don't know what the right job is. If you're looking for career advice, Careers in Transition LLC can help. Careers in Transition LLC is a career counseling firm that helps you figure out the right job for you. They're not an employment agency, and Dr. Tom Denham is not a headhunter, but they can help you write a better resume, prep for a job interview, and a lot more. Careers in Transition LLC, 11 Computer Drive West in Albany, 366-8451, and online, Careers in Transition LLC.com.
You've worked hard to acquire your wealth. Let us help you keep it. Hi, I'm Abigail Doolittle, portfolio manager at Johnson Illington Advisors. Johnson Illington is a money management firm that provides very conservative and disciplined portfolio management services. Our main goal at Johnson Illington is to preserve and enhance your wealth. We have a highly experienced team led by nationally known investment veteran and economist Hugh Johnson. Visit our website at johnson-illington.com. Johnson Illington Advisors. Advisors on Broadway in Albany.
Welcome back to the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour. I'm Greg Rinke, and tonight I'm joined by my personal injury attorney, Paul Harding of Martin Harding & Mazzotti.
Hello.
As always, Val and Chris are in the studio tonight to help break down the topic for you. If you hear something you want to give your opinion on, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY. Feel free to check us out online anytime at TullyRinke.com.
So I always like to throw this out for our listeners. When, and Paul, this could be a question for you. When you're getting ready to go to speak to a personal injury attorney, what should somebody be doing? What should they be doing in preparation for that? And what should they expect?
You know, I got, you know, oftentimes, you know, kind of when they need us, it's in a time of stress. It's a time of a tragedy, you know, that so when you get there, or oftentimes, you know, we will come see you, depending on the situation. But you need to ask some of the questions that maybe seem like hard questions, but the ones that need to be answered. Meaning, you know, what are you going to do for me? You know, what are my get the expectations out. You know, what do you think you can do? What do you think that this case is worth? Are you in a position to take this case from beginning to conclusion? What are my responsibilities? You know, am I going to have to pay for disbursements? Am I going to have to pay for any costs along the way? What is a contingency fee? You know, things like that. And then, you know, again, the best interview ever is listening. You know, listening to what the attorney says or maybe what the attorney doesn't say. So you do have choices. And I think that that's something that has been a bit of a revelation for lots of folks that, I'm going to call my family attorney, or I'm going to call that one attorney. But truth be told, you've got choices, and interviewing several lawyers, we always tell the folks, you know, if you're not comfortable, please go out and do that.
What kind of documentation should somebody bring or have with them when you come to visit them?
You know, I've got a unique response to that. We do most of our first meetings, believe it or not, in their home. And sometimes people say, geez, that's kind of a, you know, why are we doing that? And the answer is there's always stuff that's stuck at the refrigerator. There's always stuff in your drawer or something that maybe the doctor gave you that you put somewhere. So to bring the things and prepare for it would be kind of a painful process, and you'd probably end up forgetting stuff. So we end up coming to you most of the time. But if you come to the office, or if you're preparing for an in-house meeting, you know, ask the attorney what to bring. I mean, if you have a police report, if you have any of your insurance policies, you know, names of witnesses, phone numbers, things like that, things that we're going to go out and investigate. You know, but again, most of the folks who call are just something, you know, has upset their life. Something has sent them, you know, really in a whirlwind. And so they tend to be reaching out and just needing to get some advice. And then we end up having two meetings or three meetings before we get the information from them.
How long does it take before you can decide if you're going to take the case and how much you think the case is worth? I mean, is that something you can do fairly quickly?
Well, Greg, as an attorney, you've asked me a two-part question there. The one is a lot easier. The second one, I'm going to have to give you an attorney answer because values of cases, I'll answer that first. Values of cases are very difficult to give. I give a range at times, but I tend to give a conservative range because I would rather the folks at the conclusion of the case say, you know what, he said blank, but it was more. So because the value of a case depends on the injury and really what's happened to you at the time of the injury, but really is there any permanency? What has happened? Were you able to go back to work? Did your employer leave your job open for you? So tons of factors. And those are the things that I think if a lawyer sits down and says, you know, I looked at your case. I think it's worth $100,000. Boy, I'd be a little suspicious of that answer because, you know, it's really nothing that an attorney can give you until all the facts are in. Your first question, though, which I'm going to answer second, which I've forgotten already. Could you ask that again? Go ahead.
Sure. The first question was, how long after the initial interview does it take for you to make a decision if you're going to take the case?
Yeah, good. Okay. Obviously, you know, I'm forgetful, so I may forget to get back to some. It goes like this. When I talk to someone, and I talk to just about every caller who calls our office, you know, I'll know within the first 5 minutes of that conversation whether it's a case we're going to work on, whether it's a case that the person has that he or she can bring. So, you know, having done this for, you know, a lot of years, it's going on 20 now, and that's all we do. In a very short time, I get a sense as to whether this case will be successful and then whether or not it's a case that we choose to work on. And ultimately, you're going to catch rapport with people very quickly over the phone. And then, of course, once you meet with them, you know, it usually gets better from there.
I'm going to switch over the topic here to the McDonald's case. And it really
I've been dying to talk about that McDonald's
case. It's really been bugging me.
I know it has.
Because, you know, I'm a college student. I drink a lot of coffee. And
yes, you do.
When things are hot,
right?
Usually you don't drink them. And I don't, you know, accidents happen. You spill things on yourself.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you can spill a cup of coffee and blame McDonald's on it.
You know, I tell you, I hate the case. I hate talking about it. But I'm glad you asked the question because it's the sort of thing I remember, and it was back in 1994. And I came to work that day like every other day. And someone said there's a phone call. There's someone who got burned with a cup of coffee, and they wanted to talk to you about it. Turned out it was someone just calling and goofing on me. And they told me what happened. I said, wow, geez, burned with a cup of coffee. Sorry, we can't help you. And they ended the call, only to find out later in the day that this verdict had happened. Ultimately, we all have responsibility to do the things and to do it properly. And when you get a cup of coffee, it's going to be hot. But if I could, and please cut me off, and Val said she absolutely will if I get too rambly, there are some facts that may make you feel a little differently about this case. And I'm going to kind of bring you back to the actual plaintiff. And she's an 81-year-old woman at the time of the verdict, 79 when this happened to her. Had never brought a claim before. She was going through the drive-thru, and ultimately she ordered the coffee, and actually her nephew did, gave it to her. She put it between her legs, and she ended up having very serious scalding injuries. She had, I think, in the hospital for 7 or 8 days, multiple surgeries, skin grafts, et cetera. So she got hurt pretty badly. And you say, well, okay, well, don't put it between your legs. Real good lesson there. Well, the thing is, McDonald's has a history of keeping their coffee, or selling their coffee, at between 185 and 190 degrees. Well, that doesn't mean much to anyone until you find out that every other establishment, you cannot name one other establishment in terms of the national establishment that sells their coffee that hot. They sell it at about 150 to 160 degrees. And this Dunkin' Donuts cup that I have in front of me right now, I was able to drink it right away. The difference is this. You have about 2 seconds if the coffee is 185 degrees to take it off your skin before you suffer third-degree burns. And that's what happened. If the coffee is going to be 145, 150, you have 7 or 8 seconds before you're going to suffer that same injury. You look at that and you say, okay, Paul, well, that's pretty good. I didn't know that. But at the end of the day, come on. You know, are we going to sue for everybody that gets hurt? let me just take it a step further. And I didn't mean to anticipate your question, but I can read your face. I know radio's not one of those things where anyone else can, but believe me, he was ready to pounce. I'll say this. McDonald's had a program back in the 90s, and it was get a cup of coffee. The second cup is free. Here was the stipulation. You had to drink it in the McDonald's. So the end of the day, you make hot coffee, you blow on it, you blow on it, you blow. It would take 30 minutes before you could drink the darn thing, and most people would leave. So guess what? This second cup of coffee was an illusion. And the jury got a hold of that and realized, you know, this is just kind of their way of saying free second cup of coffee, but you're never going to drink it. And they got mad. And the jury gave a punitive verdict on that of I think it was about $3.5 million. That got reduced to $640,000 or something like that when the appellate division. But they gave what they perceived to be McDonald's coffee profits for one day nationally. And so I will tell you this. They looked at the facts. There had been over 700 injury claims brought by McDonald's. They had paid on 700 claims. Children burned. There were other people burned as a result of this hot coffee. And when you look at the potential that this may have been a bit of corporate greed, say, hey, free second cup of coffee. But guess what? Probably no one's really going to drink it, or not many people, unless you got the whole day to sit there, put ice cubes in it, et cetera. So the jury made this decision. I still wouldn't take the case today if it came in the door, but I can see that this lawyer, very smart lawyer, was able to get enough documentation in front of a jury that they said, you know, McDonald's, you knew this was happening. Bring your coffee down to a reasonable degree.
My problem is that, you know, they give you the cup of coffee. It's in a nice cup, and now every cup says danger, the beverage is hot.
Because of the McDonald's
case. Because of the McDonald's case.
Sure, they do. You know, and I think that you do have change. I think that once there is something like this, the whole industry gets a bit nervous. And, yeah, I have a cup in front of me, and I've probably only had about 3,000 of these in my life, but I've never read, this beverage is extremely hot. Caution. Then they repeat it in case I'm not looking at that side. I hear you, you know, and it can get annoying. And I'm not saying that this is – in fact, I wish the case never happened. I'm glad the woman got compensated. I'm sorry she got hurt. But it's the kind of case that we're forced to explain in front of juries. We're forced to explain and talk radio every now and then.
Yeah, there's other cases out there that I'm kind of interested in, like the baseball field case, you know. You go to a baseball game and they say right before the game starts, objects might be hitting to the stands. Be aware.
Well, you know, that's sort of a thing where then you got to make a decision. You say, you know, do I want to stick around where the ball could hit me? And if I do, then I have assumed that risk. But even if they don't announce that, I mean, go to a Little League game and get hit by a foul ball. You don't have a claim. You don't have a claim unless there is something that you did not anticipate as a result of the game. And just, you know, a crazy example might be that you go to a game and let's say that the guy strikes out and he gets mad and he slams his bat into the fence and a splinter goes in and he gets in some kid's eye. Well, guess what? That's not exactly something I anticipated when I took my kid to a baseball game. But foul balls, bats getting thrown at the stands, no claim.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah, and that's what it is, because the juries are the ones who make this decision. And then you get these, you know, you get some juries that are a little crazy sometimes, but not much. But guess what? Those are the ones who make the news.
I'm just hoping for the day that, you know, not every single thing has a label on it that says beware.
Stating the obvious, basically.
Yes. You know, it's true, but, you know, at the end of the day, I would say this. I'd rather have things that maybe are obvious to you and I, and I agree the coffee one is kind of silly, and there's some other ones out there, but, you know, it's not silly to everybody. So if somebody actually reads it and someone actually changes their behavior and doesn't get hurt as a result of it, it's not really bothersome to see that on there. As I said, I've never read it until today. And, you know, not everybody is kind of in, you know, starting with the same knowledge base. So hopefully some of the warnings that are out there are not too distracting for people, and it just serves as an annoyance.
Some of them are very silly. Like the Red Bull one. It says on the commercials on the bottom, you know, Red Bull gives you wings, and then on the bottom, you cannot actually fly after drinking a Red Bull.
I don't know. It's I've had Red Bull, and I felt like I could a couple times, but I will say this. Ultimately, you're in a situation where I think Red Bull is having some fun with that, you know, because there's so many jokes about the disclaimers that I think ultimately that maybe they're using that as a marketing pitch.
True.
And maybe they're not, you know. So at the end, so I don't know, but I do agree with you that it can get burdensome.
We'd love to know what you think about this subject. Give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY. Time for the news and weather.
Fox News Radio, I'm Don Matheson. Turmoil on Wall Street. Fox Business Network reporting Bank of America is buying Merrill Lynch. This comes after Merrill shares fell 35% last week. Lehman Brothers could go belly up tomorrow.
Right now, there are several different members of large investment banks as well as commercial banks, different financial gurus meeting at the New York Federal Reserve Bank to try and figure out what happens tomorrow should Lehman Brothers, as expected, file for bankruptcy.
Fox Business correspondent Adam Shapiro. And insurance giant AIG in talks to raise additional capital as it struggles with falling reserves. Hurricane Ike has left Galveston a community in ruins.
After surviving the storm, residents of Galveston still on the island are trying to survive the aftermath. No electricity, water, or phones. The Texas National Guard has joined other agencies in the relief effort.
Mike Makowicz, Fox News. We report, you decide.
810 WGY Storm Team Forecast.
Well, in the overnight hours, wind and a few showers. Lows going to drop to around 74 as we wake up to start the work week. Partly cloudy, windy for your Monday, 75. Tuesday, partly cloudy, 72. So hopefully with the wind and stopping the rain a little bit, it might dry out. And Wednesday and Thursday, going to see a lot of sunshine. That'll help as well. Partly sunny Wednesday, 72. And then Thursday, partly sunny, 65. From the Weather Channel, I'm meteorologist Craig Ross with the 810 WGY Storm Team Forecast.
Pets aren't just animals. They're companions and often members of the family. Unfortunately, pets are not always treated with the care they deserve. Animal cruelty and neglect are sadly a reality. Detecting and reporting abuse are the most important steps in bringing animal cruelty to an end. The Schenectady County Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, SPCA, is a nonprofit volunteer organization that investigates complaints of animal cruelty. Our volunteers donate their time and energy because they believe in our mission to protect animals. We are not funded. We rely exclusively on public donations. You can help with a tax-deductible donation by calling 518-755-9517 or visit our website, SchenectadySPCA.org. Or, if you'd like to join the Schenectady SPCA as a volunteer, again the number 518-755-9517 or on the web, SchenectadySPCA.org.
All right, Integral One Network Solutions. Tell me what they do again.
Well, they worked with us to design our new computer network. That's really made a difference. Helps us run our business better. They monitor everything 24/7 to keep it running smoothly. And they manage it all, so I don't have to hire an IT guy.
So when I hire Integral One, they manage my network so I can manage my business. Talk about peace of mind.
Integral One Network Solutions, online at integralone.net. That's integralone.net, 464-4014.
Thanks for coming back to us. If you're a first-time listener, you're listening to the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour. I'm Greg Rinke, and each Sunday at 9 p.m., I'm joined by the attorneys from my law firm, Tully Rinke PLLC, to give insight into the legal issues that matter most to you. We have a special guest with us tonight, Paul Harding of Martin Harding & Mazzotti, and he's here to explain personal injury law. And we have Jose on line 23, who has a question about a work injury.
Greg, thank you very much. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Love the show, especially College Chris. Think he's a real high-class kind of guy. But anyway, on to my story. I was hurt a couple months ago at work. I work at a sporting goods store, okay?
Okay.
I was unloading some very heavy things, and I dropped a heavy weight on my foot. And I had some expensive hospital bills and whatnot. But I really suffered some serious emotional damage from this incident, and I want to know if I can collect on top of my hospital bill, maybe some punitive damages.
Well, I'm not the expert on this, but did you collect workers' comp?
They just reimbursed me for, because I was part-time at the time. So I wasn't on any kind of full-time insurance or whatnot, but they did pay for my hospital visit.
Well, Paul, you might know more about me on this.
Well, you know, I would say this. In New York State, you are your sole recovery has to do with workers' compensation. So you were paid for, I take it back, the medical bills were paid. In fact, if you had any permanency, you would be handled through workers' comp. You do not have any other claim. The emotional injuries that you may have sustained would also be included under comp. So unfortunately, welcome to the state of New York. That's it.
What about some kind of personal lawsuit?
You cannot bring a claim against your employer in the state of New York. You are limited to workers' compensation recovery.
Thanks for the call, Jose.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jose.
We have Dave from Clifton Park who has a question about coverage. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I was wondering if you could explain to me what some coverage was with regards to your auto policy.
Well, Dave, I will tell you this. The some coverage is fairly technical stuff, and to the folks that may not know what that is, it's supplemental underinsured motorist coverage. And imagine this. We all look at our, again, as you're in a motor vehicle, we all look at our policies, and you say, well, I've got a $100,000 policy, I've got a $500,000 policy. But that is a policy that you have if someone brings a claim against you. If you cause injury to someone else, they basically are covered for the amount of insurance that you buy. So let's say, Dave, that you had in fact, do you know how much liability coverage you have?
I believe I have $100,000.
Okay, so what that means is this, is that if you were to go out and you had a bad driving experience and you were negligent and you caused injury to someone, they would have the ability to recover up to $100,000 against your insurance company, and then you might be exposed beyond that. In New York State, you're allowed to have some or supplemental underinsured motorist coverage equaling the amount of your liability. And what that means is this. Let's say you or a family household member were injured. And the person that injured you either had inadequate insurance, meaning under $100,000, or no insurance. You are now protected up to $100,000 under that scenario. So, in essence, you're kind of buying insurance in case someone hurts you or a family member and doesn't have adequate insurance. So, please, everyone out there, grab the policy. If your SUM, or supplemental underinsured motorist coverage, does not equal your liability coverage, please call your agent, fire them immediately. Just make sure that they, in fact, do that. And then take a look, since you're talking to them, say, hey, do I got enough to cover if something goes bad?
Good question, Steve. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
We have Andy on the line from Saratoga.
Lots of callers tonight.
Who has a question on lawsuits. Andy, you're on the air.
Hey, I got two questions for you. The first one is, how can I get a hold of Val? I saw her in last week's Times Union, and I think we really need to chat. And number two, if I get bit by a dog, can I sue?
Well, I can handle the second question. And Val, I'll let you I don't know Val's availability. So I'm going to start out with the second one, then I'll turn the first question over to Val.
That's great.
State of New York. Here we are. Dogs get one free bite. So domestic animals, dogs get one free bite. I got a dog. He goes out and he bites you. Well, guess what? Now I'm on notice that my dog may not be the friendliest dog. He may be very friendly to me, but he's not so good with you or other people that he encounters. So now the second person that he bites, you would have a claim against me, and my homeowner's policy would, in fact, be on the hook. But if it's the first bite, you're out of luck.
And that applies with not only dogs, but basically all domesticated animals.
It's all domestic. Yep, all domestic animals. But if you choose to have a wild animal, let's say you decide to, I'm going to get a lion, stick him in my garage. Well, if he bites someone, you're on the hook for the first bite. But the domestic animals, yeah, one free bite.
But what I find interesting is what about someone that has like a pet monkey? You see them sometimes out of bars and clubs, people have pet monkeys. I mean, can you domesticate a monkey?
That would be one. I would tell you I've never run across the pet monkey case, but I would certainly make a strong argument that this, in fact, is a wild animal. And if it were to injure someone, that they wouldn't need to have a first bite or, in this case, a first act of aggression to know that they could be aggressive because these are wild animals.
Hey, thanks for the call.
No, Val's phone number.
Now, Valerie, I'm going to turn this over to you.
I think the safest answer there is to call the office, 518-218-7100.
We have Paul on the line. Question about wrongful termination. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you guys tonight?
Good.
I just wanted to give a shout-out to Val. I saw her in the newspaper last week, and everything was great about that. But my question tonight was, I hurt my knee playing church league softball. I had to get an operation. I'm a bartender. And if I'm in constant communication with the manager there and he says I can go back to work, if I show up at work and they say I can't work there anymore, can you be wrongfully terminated from an injury?
Yeah, I got some bad news for you. Here's what you got. You are what they call an at-will employee, meaning you show up on Monday, you work till Friday, I pay you Friday, and we're probably going to see you on Monday. But on Monday, you show up, I say, you know what? We're not going to use you anymore, whether you are injured, whether I just decided I'm not going to use you. I certainly can't get rid of you because of your race. I can't get rid of you because of your age. I can't get rid of you because of your gender. But if I just don't want to have someone limping around my bar, guess what? You're done. So no protection. I would stay in very close communication with this person. Let them know how you're doing and how well you're doing and when you're able to come back, and hope they don't hire someone else.
Am I still on the air, sir?
You are.
You are.
My question is if he terminates me after he says that I can come back, is that still against the law?
Well, I'm going to say this. You know, at this point, you're going to get into a bit of a technical interpretation, but him just telling you come back when you can, and then when you come back, it doesn't work out. You know, you're not going to be in a very strong position. You're still an Atwell employee. If he had given you some reason, said, listen, come back. Don't take this other job you were offered. So let's say you're offered a job at another facility, and you say, you know, I'm going to go work with Kevin because Kevin said he's going to give you my job, and you forewent this other position. Now you've got the argument that says, you know, I relied on what you told me. But the fact that he just said, hey, come back, you got a job, you come back, you don't got a job, you're out of luck.
Now, sir, if there's an employee handbook that I read thoroughly and I signed and it said there's like a 3-strike policy or a 2-strike policy to be fired, and they fire me at will, I mean, can I hold them to that?
You know, that's when you start getting into whether or not that they've got enough to do it. But you still are an at-will employee, and that really refers to your actions, whether your actions would justify it.
Thanks for the call, Paul. We want to move now to the topic of how do you deal with an insurance company? I know these questions have been great, and a lot of these have been dealing with specific cases, but how do you deal with an insurance company, especially if you're not represented? Because I know a lot of times after you're involved, and sometimes in these horrendous accidents, I know after the Staten Island Ferry accident and some of these other big incidents that took place, the insurance companies were seeking out the people that were hurt and were trying to settle with them very quickly.
Well, as you can imagine, I'm not a big fan of that occurring. I'm not a big fan of the insurance companies and what they do. And I think that some of them do operate and catch people at their very worst. And there certainly have been lots of incidents and folks that I talk to where they're in the hospital and the insurance company comes in and offers them a settlement, gets them to sign some documents. They're not quite sure what they signed, but they've signed a release. The answer is this, is that if you're going to work with your insurance company, clearly anything that you do, you got to realize that they are, in fact, gathering information. They are, in fact, coming to see you to try to control the outcome of this case. And they are not the United Way. They are a for-profit corporation. And their goal, although it may be to be fair, I'm not suggesting that every insurance person out there is trying to undercut the value of a case, but I would say that you got to look at it logically. Their position is they want to save their company money. They want to control. Why? Maybe they don't want you to get a lawyer. Well, because they want you to settle quick before ultimately even all your injuries are even known.
And so, also, Paul, sorry, Greg. I had a question. If you did get a settlement and sign documents, is that the end there for you?
That's the end, unless you can show that you were under some type of duress. Maybe you were, in the hospital and you were. On a heavy dose of a pain medication, and you can show that you didn't mean to do that, or you're under the age of 18, you couldn't sign a contract. But other than that, no, you're out of luck. And they do it. And they do it because ultimately they're the ones who, you know, they come in, hey, we're from the insurance company, and we're here to help. And you will listen to them. And then they're going to say, well, let's get a recorded statement. Let's get a signed statement. Well, you can bet that statement is going to be quite factual. It'll be the truth, but it's going to be swayed in such a way that they may be able to use it against you down the road. And I fully expect the next phone call will be from an insurance adjuster.
Now, if you're represented by a lawyer, these insurance companies can't talk to you anymore, right?
Well, it's true. They can't talk to you about the liability aspect of it. Your no-fault carrier or the carrier that's paying your medical bills may still have the ability to communicate with you about paying the bills. But no, once they find out you're represented, they now will contact our law firm, and then we'll control the flow of the information.
So my next question is about what if an insurance agent comes up to you, and you haven't talked to an attorney? Should you get the attorney right away, or should you talk to him for a couple minutes and maybe see what he's got to say? He's probably not offering you the best option, but it could seem very good at the time.
Well, they've got a whole process, and they're going to come up and they're going to try to do some relationship building right away. They're not always showing up with a checkbook and saying, let's resolve this thing. They're showing up saying, let's work together on this. Let's build a relationship. And some of them legitimately may want to be doing that. But at the end of the day, we just have to use common sense that they're going to want to pay you less and you want to get more. So, you can do whatever you want. My strong recommendation, and it may sound very biased, but I have seen the ugliness of this backfire to folks is that if you are hurt in an accident, call a lawyer, find out what your rights are, and immediately, you know, again, when you're able to focus on it, and then you can make an educated decision. Because I think the attorney will give you some advice that you probably are not going to get from the insurance company.
Definitely good advice. Time for a short break. We'll be back with Paul Harding of Martin Harding & Mazzotti when he'll explain the way damages are awarded in a personal injury case. Feel free to give us a call with any of your questions. To reach us, call 1-800-TALK-WGY or press *WGY on your cell phone. If you don't have a chance to get in touch with us tonight, you can reach us at the Tully Rinke office all week at 518-218-7100.
Usually, a mortgage company's sole focus is property, but First Rate Funding is centered on people, not property. Whether you're buying a home or struggling with your current adjustable rate mortgage, First Rate Funding will give you the same amazing personal service. First Rate Funding, New Corner Road, Albany, and Broadway, Saratoga Springs. Don't wait. Call today, 452-4700, and please go online, firstratefunding.net, and see how they can help you today. Registered mortgage broker, New York State Banking Department. Mortgage loans arranged with third-party providers.
As a busy working professional, looking good's important to you. No one understands this better than Best Cleaners, the Capital Region's premier garment care provider and dry cleaner. Got a wrinkle in your schedule? Best Cleaners offers pickup and delivery of your dry cleaning right from your home or office, so you don't have to fit one more errand into your busy week. Call 458-BEST, and we'll take care of the rest. With three locations in Del Mar, Loudonville, and on the Latham Circle, Best Cleaners. Always look your best. Call 458-BEST. 458-BEST.
If a commercial lease is in your future, listen closely. Conley Associates will provide you with an honest, unbiased comparison of available office space. Unlike the competition, Conley Associates works directly with you, the tenant, finding your business the ideal location at the best terms. Best of all, leave the landlords to us, because we represent tenants only. Secure your new office space with a tenants-only approach from Conley Associates. Landlords need not apply. Conley Associates, 463-5500.
You know this isn't the right job for you, but the problem is you don't know what the right job is. If you're looking for career advice, Careers in Transition LLC can help. Careers in Transition LLC is a career counseling firm that helps you figure out the right job for you. They're not an employment agency, and Dr. Tom Denham is not a headhunter, but they can help you write a better resume, prep for a job interview, and a lot more. Careers in Transition LLC, 11 Computer Drive West in Albany, 366-8451, and online, careersintransitionllc.com.
We're back to the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour. I'm Greg Rinke, and tonight I'm joined by personal injury attorney Paul Hardy. As always, Val and Chris are here with us. We have a call from Joan from Clifton Park, who has a question about personal injuries. Joan, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening. My son was hurt at a friend's house back in February. Child jumped off the back of a couch and landed on my son's hand, bending it back to his wrist, and my son's 11. Now, my insurance only paid part of that, and I am on Social Security disability. Can I come after them for the medical balance?
The short answer is yes. And, again, I'm going to assume that there is a homeowner's policy, that the folks were homeowners. Is that true?
Yes.
Then they'll have what they call a medical payments provision in their homeowner's policy, and they should be able to recover or pay any out-of-pocket expenses that you had. Now, how long ago was this?
The end of February.
Okay. And how is your son doing?
He's not getting full use of his hand back.
Okay.
That's why I was wondering. I mean, This child has a behavior issue that did it.
Yep. Okay. Well, you know, I would say this. The short answer is that, yeah, the medical bills can, in fact, be paid through the medical payments coverage. And, you know, I will tell you that if you want to talk more about this, because I know things start getting a bit, getting into injuries and involving your son, you can certainly give me a call at the firm at 862-1200. I will be there all day tomorrow.
Okay. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Okay, John.
All right, so I guess switching gears a little bit, we're going to chat about wrongful death. I wanted to bring up the, I think it's recent, January maybe, Hold Your Wii for a Wii competition they had.
Sure. Yep.
For those of you who aren't familiar, they basically held a competition to the person who could hold their urination and vomiting, I guess, also, and drink and continue to drink and eat, and they would be rewarded with a Wii.
You know, I will tell you that I only know about this what I've read, and certainly it makes for some great reading. You've got two things. It's easy to look at this and kind of go back to Chris's statement. You know, come on. You know, we all got to be responsible for our actions, and I absolutely agree with that. But when you set up an event, you've got a duty to kind of look at it and say, okay, what's going to happen here? Well, people are going to drink a lot of water, and they're going to hold their urine. And what does that really mean medically? And, you know, if you hold a gun on my head tonight, you know, could I die from drinking 2 gallons of water or whatever she drank? I don't know. I don't know if I could. And, again, do I have any other issues that this might make it worse? So I think I'm not sure anyone in this room would go ahead and participate in that to the point.
But I guess the question, Paul, becomes is where do we draw the line? I mean, every July 4th, Nathan's has the hot dog eating contest. Should we eliminate these contests? I mean, I think a lot of this comes down to common sense and reasonableness. I mean, people, I think, when they enter some of these contests, they need to basically assume some of this risk. And I'm sure they probably signed a waiver.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. And again, you get to the Nathan's Hot Dog Eat Contest. That's like an international competition here, and these folks train all year. And certainly analogous. But you've got folks showing up for whatever the prize was, I assume a Wii.
Yep. And for those who don't know, the 28-year-old ended up dying from doing this.
So I look at this, and who was in the best position right there, or who was in a position to make some good decisions? I think that at this point that a jury would look at this. This will get to a jury, and they're going to get more facts than what we're all reading in just a newspaper. And ultimately, they may find exactly what maybe the feeling is in this room is that this is 100% her fault. She shouldn't have done this. I would feel that you've got to look into this, and at least as you mentioned, have a waiver. If she signed a waiver and said, "Look, drinking too much water can cause untimely death." Look. To me, that then shifts that burden a lot more to her. But if it was just show up and it was kind of a rinky-dink operation and they thought it was funny and cute and she drank 2 gallons of water and she died, do a little more research, guys.
So I guess my question is about these waivers that you're signing. I've gone on some roller coasters, or I think it's called the Sky Coaster. They have one up at Six Flags where you get pulled up to the top of this thing and they drop you.
Sure.
Like a big pendulum. I signed this thing, not thinking anything of it.
Who reads it? I don't read it.
But I didn't read it. And, paid them the $40. And what if I fell and died? Could my parents get money back? Could somebody sue?
Sure they could. This is what it is. It's kind of like you are saying that if I get hurt, if this ride does what it's supposed to do and I get hurt, I don't have a claim. Meaning if I can't drop 40 feet really fast and I can't make a claim because I had a head injury or I've had a pre you've had maybe a prior injury that this would make it worse for you. So, but from the perspective of you go up on that roller coaster and it comes detached. Now you go airborne and you hit the ground and you die. You can never sign a waiver to that degree. So it comes down to you can sign a waiver as to what you reasonably expect is going to happen. And if that happens and you get hurt, well, guess what? You knew about it. But if it's unreasonable, like this detaching of this roller coaster, that wasn't what you signed on for.
What about skydiving? Because I've been thinking about doing that lately.
Well, I think it's a real good idea. I think skydiving is a lot of fun. But I would say this. You're going to expect that what they give you is going to work. So if you get hurt and you land and your parachute opens and you land and you snap your ankle because you fall into a groundhog hole, no claim. But if you jump out of that plane or while you're doing it, the plane kind of goes upside down and you end up getting hit by the propeller, or you jump out and your chute doesn't work, they got to do a little better than that. There's no chute at all. I guess you see that on Bugs Bunny or something. But I'm sure it's happened where you jumped out, no chute. You think you should sign a waiver for that?
I don't know. I didn't read what I was signing. So.
Well, what I'd like to talk about is actually, Chris, if you were to go skydiving and God forbid you were to die, I mean, in New York State, how much is Chris's life worth?
This is a topic Val, you're going to have to hit the buzzer. She has a buzzer she can hit. It actually gives me an electric shock and I stop talking. But here it is. New York State's got this absolute arcane common law rule. There are 4 states, maybe 3 left in the entire country that have it. But here it is, guys. In the state of New York, if you are killed as a result of someone's negligence, you are limited in recovery to pecuniary or money loss. Let me put this in English. Chris, how old are you?
21.
Any children?
No, not that I know.
Okay, and do you support anybody?
No, I do not.
Okay, so you've got a situation where there's nobody counting on Chris to actually live their life. So Chris dies in this skydiving accident. I've tried to talk him out of it. He won't listen to me. He goes out. There's no parachute. They screwed up. I bring the claim. But at the end of the day, you have one set of facts. His life in the state of New York is who's lost out on Chris's death? Answer, arguably no one. So what's the value of his case?
No one.
No one has. Because they only look at what money has been lost as a result of your death. And it goes back to England, common law England, where, you know, one of your sons were killed, and guess what? He couldn't pick the crop that day or that, you know, that season. So you had to go out and you had to hire a worker to do it, and it cost you £80. And so the damage would be £80.
What about an employer?
Go ahead.
What about an employer if he's making money for
it doesn't matter.
For somebody?
Nope. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Let's say he's like a really, really top guy at the office. Nope. They would not have standing to bring a claim.
That's why I would take insurance out of him.
Right. Hopefully he's well insured. And if you are going to do that, we can talk about that too. Maybe put my name somewhere on the list. But
I
would say that the wrongful death law is real bad. It works real well. We'll turn it over to Greg Rickney, who has got children, who's got a wife, who has a career. And if something were to happen to him, the wrongful death law probably does work. Because guess what? They have lost out on a lot of economic benefit of him being alive. But is that really what it's about? What you don't have is the loss of the person. Because I'm sure your parents love you. Is that true, Chris?
I hope so.
Yes, and I'm sure other people do too. But the folks who would have standing to bring a claim, a brother, a sister, a parent, they do not have a cause of action or a very good one. Would you have a claim? Yes, it'd be minimal. But ultimately, other states have the loss of enjoyment of the person.
Pain and suffering type thing?
Well, the pain and suffering would come down to this. If you can prove pain and suffering, meaning like let's say poor Chris is having an awful night here. He goes down, the parachute kind of half opens, doesn't open, he lands, he survives for days, and he knows he's conscious, but he just gives up. That's the end of it. Ultimately, he would still have two causes of action, one for pain and suffering, which he would recover, and again, depending on the amount of time, the amount of pain and suffering, and then the wrongful death. So they are separate causes of action.
So if you die quick, your recovery is less.
Yeah, there's a real morbid, and I think it was the New York Times kind of ran it when we were talking about the absurdity of the wrongful death, and it said if you're going to run over, someone, in this situation, and you look back and it looks like they're still moving, kind of back up and hit them again, and certainly they didn't mean anything by that other than to drive the point home that the legislature had set up something that has really devalued human life in the state of New York.
Now, how are some of the other states handling this? You said that we're in a minority.
Yep.
How are the other states
handling it? They're handling it the way that probably everyone in this room and everyone listening would handle it. They would look at this and what was the loss of the person? Have the ability to say, you know what? I've lost my son. And anyone who's gone through something like that, in any fashion, it's going to tell you that this will be the single worst event in their life. And so for the defendant, the wrongdoer, to get away with this, by having a minimal amount of damages is absurd. So the other states look well beyond just the money loss.
So do they cover your funeral costs if that happened? Is that part of it, or is it just what you're worth at the time of death?
Yep, it's going to be what you're worth at the time of death. Again, if you're in a motor vehicle accident, no-fault insurance has a component that pays for your but from a skydiving perspective, that'd be out-of-pocket expenses. So, yeah, you're right. You start calculating damages. There's $10,000. What else is he worth? Well, another $10,000. Maybe when I get older, he might have done some things for me.
Good question, Chris. That's it for us this Sunday. I'd like to give a special thank you to Paul for joining us tonight.
A lot of fun.
If you didn't have a chance to reach out to us this evening, we can be found all week at the Tully Rinke office at 518-218-7100, and Paul can be reached at
862-1200.
Thanks for listening. We'll be here on WGY each Sunday at 9 p.m. Be sure to join us next week for a look at bankruptcy law.